Well, good evening, everybody. Welcome back to Bible class here at Hyde Park. It's good to hear such a good buzz in the room here. We have Brother John Sivier, who's given us a presentation he's prepared on the Bible and the Anzacs. So we're very much looking forward to that this evening. So we've just got a short reading to introduce our presentation this evening. And so that reading will be taken from Revelation chapter 16. And we'll be reading the first 16 verses together.
Thank you, Seb, and good evening, brethren and sisters and young people. This evening, you will not be looking up any verses. So if you feel uncomfortable with what's on your lap, it's the history of Australia tied into the Bible. Now, we would think probably, well, what's Australia got to do in the Bible? You know, where's anything about Australia in the Bible? Well, one would hope by the end of this evening that when you move around Australia, you will think of Revelation 16. That's the goal for this evening. And we've centered it around the Anzacs and the Bible because this week, of course, and today, what's the Anzacs got to do with the Bible? That's actually in Albany. And there's a statue there, two horses. One on the horse standing up is an Australian soldier, and the other horse belongs to a New Zealand soldier. And the horse has gone down, and the New Zealand rider is being held up by the Australian rider. You see the Anzacs, Australia, New Zealand, court. That's Albany. Now, Albany, there you can see it probably a lot easier. The New Zealand military man or horse friend there in the middle. And Albany was where it all began for the Anzacs. Because on November the 1st, 1914, the Anzacs left Albany to travel to the Middle East. So all the soldiers, the horses, all the military equipment reached Albany. And of course, in those days, this is 1914, any travel is by boat. So that was the departing place. And there you see the soldiers marching down the Albany main street. And here they were, and there are the boats out in the Albany harbour area. And they were to load upon them, and horsemen in their thousands as well. Many of the horsemen were so farmers, you know, 17-year-olds, 19-year-olds, they were off to war. It was a time of excitement for them. Well, it was a little different when they got there, as so many young men found out when they went to war. But they were brilliant horsemen. And you can see there are the boats and the people seeing them off to go to the Middle East. And they finished up at Cairo. So Cairo was the base, and out of Cairo they would go actually, of course, to Gallipoli area, to the Dardanelles. And you can see the tents and the pyramids in the background. What was it all about? When that war broke out, there was a poster that was put out by Britain. Now, of course, it was the British Empire in the earth in those days. And the empire needs men. There was a call to Australia, Canada, India and New Zealand because they were Commonwealth countries to come and help us in the Middle East. Helped by the young lions. Here's the old lion, the mother lion, Britain, and all the young lions to help the mother lion. The old lion defies the foes. And that poster, I reckon, has been shown hundreds and hundreds of times in Christadelphia since World War I. The young lions. It's straight out the Bible. Well, the history of Anzacs actually goes back well before 1914. We all know that Cook came and circumnavigated Australia. He was in 1728 to 1779. And this is many, many years before any Anzacs. And Cook left a place called Plymouth in Britain. And if you go to Plymouth there, you see an overview of Plymouth. And here it talks about Captain James Cook, discoverer and navigator. And everyone thinks about Cook as being that he was a naval man, and he had secret orders. Still a naval base today. And there's the area today of Plymouth. Australia, British. Those two countries are to be part of the British Empire. This is before ever Australia was settled, remember. This is in the 1770s, before 1770. Those were his orders. Australia, New Zealand. God at work. Angels at work. Then, in 1770, they're at work. And we know sailed the ships bound for Australia carrying men and women convicts, 28th of January 1788, and they went to what today is really Sydney, and Australia was settled with convicts. Well, you probably know the history of the convicts. Well, here was Cook. Travelled, came across, most travel used to come around South Africa into this sort of region, but Cook came under South America. And there he went right around New Zealand, and in 1770 on the coastline of Australia, he stopped. He landed at a place today in 1770 that is called 1770 on the Queensland coast between Bundaberg and Rockhampton. 1770. They named the town is called 1770. Well, then he went on to Cooktown, and there his statue is in Cooktown. James Cook, Cooktown. Of course, you may have read in sort of recent years that a lot of people desecrate some of his statues because of this movement with the Indigenous versus the white Australia, etc. But this is history. So here's Cook. He's now put New Zealand and Australia on the map for Britain. The Young Lions. Well before any time to do with Gallipoli. Well, let's move on a little bit. You might have heard of the Bastille in Paris. Well, this is a sketch of evidently the Bastille in Paris in 1789. And there was the fall of the Bastille, 14th of July, 1789. Now, it was really a medieval fortress there and a prison. And really represented the royal authority of Paris, because the royalty and the church dominated Paris and France and the whole area. And there were millions of just ordinary people who were dominated by the church and dominated by a hierarchy, a royal hierarchy. that fell. And that was the beginning of the French Revolution. That's the first vial that we read this evening. Upon the earth, a grievous sore. And Christ, writing those words given to John, is predicting the French Revolution. Now, I don't have time this evening to deal with it a little bit, I mean, because of the vials is a huge area, but in chasing some of the history of it, I went back to look at some quotes that sometimes Christadelphians use about the French Revolution. And there's a list this big, of one of which was Isaac Newton, who predicted the French Revolution 100 years before it happened because of Revelation 16. Upon the earth, there would be a huge change. And on the scene came Napoleon. And he became the one who started to fulfill a lot of that Revelation 16 at the very beginning of it. Because it was 1769 to 1821, Napoleon. And of course, we're now at that time period at the end of the 18th century. Then there's a second vial. And the second vial said there was going to be, a vial was like judgment being poured out. And now the judgment would be poured out upon the sea. You see, Napoleon's now on the scene. And Napoleon wants to control the world. He's been on the land, and some of the seals there, some of the vials there speak about mountains and rivers and so on, and he went inland and he conquered everywhere, and now he's going to conquer the seas, control the seas. And of course, any movement in those days was by ships upon the sea. So he then sent a man called Nicolas Bourdin to travel down south to the southern hemisphere. And he was given two ships, and they were based in Timor to the north of Australia. And from there, he was to go down and take control of New Holland. Australia had various explorers reach, particularly over Western Australia up the top end, because they used to go to the India areas and the East India, as they call it, with merchants and trading. And some of those ships finished up landing along the coast of Western Australia. Abel Tasman was in 1642. So this area was known, but they didn't know much about it. There was no white inhabitants or anything, just indigenous people. And it was called Nova Orlando or New Holland because of the Dutch explorers. And Napoleon sent Bourdin out to take control. Here's a map of what they knew around that time. They had been down to south to Tasmania in the south, and they thought that was probably joined to the rest of what they knew. But you see, a lot of the southern area of Australia had never been reached at all by any country, any ship, any person. But here's an interesting little thing. This map is a Roman map. And up there, it's 1748. You see, the Roman system's in the story already about Australia. And what's the book of Revelation about? The Roman system. Things which must shortly come to pass, and then the history from the days of John Ray in 1896 onwards, right down to the kingdom being established in the earth. And here's Rome with its map of Australia. You see, always in the picture. Britain immediately sent Matthew Flinders out, because Britain was at war with Napoleon, with France. Out went Bourdin, out went Matthew Flinders. Britain was determined that Australia was not going to be French Catholic, but British Protestant country. And it happened. Got it worked. So Flinders left in the Investigator, and he travelled from Britain down around South Africa, Cape Town, and across to Australia. In the end, he went right around Australia, and then he went back through Mauritius, and he was in captivity in Mauritius and so on. But he said, there's a new country now called Australis, and it's British Protestant, not French Catholic. Now, France is still known today as the daughter of Rome. She is so Catholic. France is so Catholic today, still there. Well, what happened? Well, Flinders came in there to the left, to Cape Leeuwin, and to the area of Albany. Now, this is 1801 to 1803. He then came across below the Great Australian Bight. Some of you may have driven along the Nullarbor Plain. From there, he went up into Spencer Gulf. Remember, this had never, ever been mapped out before. And from there, he went to what we know today as Encounter Bay. Now, meanwhile, Bourdin from Timor to the north of Australia, he came down along the Western Australian coast. You can see he came into the left there, much like Flinders, South Africa around, went up to Timor with his boats. He came around, he went around the bottom of Tasmania, then below which Melbourne is today, and he came to the region of Encounter Bay. Flinders came in 8th of April 1802, there's Bourdin in Encounter Bay. Matthew Flinders, a British vessel, Bourdin, a French vessel, and the two countries are at war! And they meet in Encounter Bay. And there's a picture of the two ships. Encounter Bay. We've all been there. Perhaps ridden on that. But did you ever see that? When I first was looking for that, I went to Victor Harbour, went to the tourist place and said, where is this plaque that I wanted to find? Never heard of it. It's where the horses stop at the end of the rower line. And there's a plaque in the middle of the lawn. What's the plaque? It tells the story of Flinders and Bourdin meeting in Encounter Bay. They didn't meet exactly here near the island or anything like that. It was really closer to Goolwa where they met. If you're going to the Adelaide Zoo, as you walk into the zoo, there's a statue of Bourdin and a record about Bourdin. This is all around the first and the second and the third seal era of Revelation 16. If you go to Kangaroo Island, Flinders told Bourdin that there was water and food and so on available on Kangaroo Island. And if you go across from Cape Jervis, you come to Penashore. And when you reach Penashore, that's a shot of Penashore, the harbour, and see that little dome there? Well, at that spot was Frenchman's Rock that they found. And when Bourdin went there, one of the sailors engraved or painted on this rock the record. You can see right down there, 1803, and named one of the boats, Frenchman's Rock. And the dome was later built in 1906 over the rock. But what was happening, like most things, that rock was getting damaged, it was getting graffitied and so on, and so they then took it up, brought it up to Adelaide. And then, that was in 1917, and then it went back to Kangaroo Island in 1986, and it's down there in the tourist centre today, that rock put in. And if you go around Kangaroo Island, you'll find like there's Bourdin Beach. And there's a picture of it, and there's a little sailing vessel of his ship, and they named the beach after him. Lots of places on Kangaroo Island have French names. But see, Matthew Flinders made it British. Didn't finish up in the hands of the French. It was a British colony. It was a young lion. 1803. 1836, South Australia is a state. Of course, Kangaroo Island is part of South Australia. There were people on Kangaroo Island. Whalers used to come into Kangaroo Island and so on as they were chasing whales around that area. So Kangaroo Island had had people there before South Australia was a state. You go over there and you can read the history of it. But it was in 1836, of course, that our state was formed. What about the second bowl upon the sea? Said there'd be judgments poured out upon the sea. And then comes Horatio Nelson, the British naval man, 1758, 1805, and the Great Battle of Trafalgar. All these are really, you see, in the history, the second vial. Now, just reading Revelation for the first time, you wonder what it is. You've got no idea. But then you start going back through the history of things and you can see how it matches up. 1805 was the year Brother John Thomas was born. 1871, and in Brooklyn, New York, there's a cemetery. And on that grave site, during a busy... I can hardly read it.
Lifetime.
You can read it from there better than I can.
I'll try. During a busy lifetime, by mouth and pen, he contended earnestly for the faith once delivered to the saints, and at his death left behind him, as the result of his labours, a body of people in different parts of the world
known as
the Christadelphians, to continue the work begun.
And that's exactly what we're still doing today. 1805. Here's Goolwa, the little street in Goolwa. Remember we said that Bourdin and Flinders met? It was really off the coast from Goolwa. That whole area is called Encounter Bay. That's why it's called Encounter, of course. They two encountered there. It was in 1878 that a brother from New Zealand, a teacher, came over for a holiday, and he was in that vicinity, and he was a Bible student, he was a Christadelphian, and he wanted to try and get someone talking about, was anyone interested in the Bible? Well, of course, they had churches there. And someone said, oh, there was a certain person who really did read a lot of his Bible, etc. And the end result of that was the Kennetts became the first Christadelphians in South Australia, baptised at Goolwa. Goolwa, where Flinders and Bourdin met. And then next door, Brother Jerdon was baptised. There's his home today. That's what it is today. And next door to that is Brother Jerdon's chaff store. And so the truth came to South Australia from a New Zealand brother. Now, there were brethren, sisters in Victoria and so on, but New Zealand had quite a lot of brethren, early brethren, sisters in the truth. But there was a New Zealander linked with an Australian that began the Christadelphians in South Australia. See, you're back to this all the time. Britain and the young lions. The young lions, Australia, Canada, India, New Zealand, the British Empire. Well, of course, Gallipoli. 1915 to 2015, remembered this week. That's the very last Anzac person to die. He was 103 and he died in 2002. Tasmanian, made out he was older than he was, and a little guy. Look, the rifles with the bayonets as tall as he is. He went on actually to be very academic, a professor in the university, etc. But they remembered him and even had a stamp with his face on. Well, we come back to Albany. And there we had that previous slide. They headed for Gallipoli. What was the idea? There's the Dardanelles, and there's Constantinople or Istanbul, as we know it today, and there's down the bottom the Lone Pine, Anzac Cove, the Gallipoli Peninsula. And the idea that Britain and that had was that they were going to land in that area and cut Turkey, the Ottoman Empire, in halves, to split the European side of Turkey, well, Ottoman Empire then, from the southeastern. That was the God. That's what they set out to do. Not what God wanted. And everything went wrong. It's probably the most written military story of any in the world. Everything went wrong. If you want to read a very good book about the Anzac Empires and Israel's restoration, Kelvin Crombie's written a book, and it was very good. They were even arguing in the House of Commons, in the British Parliament, about the fact, well, Christ has got to come and the Jews have got to go back home. And so that was the language in those days. You wouldn't hear anything like that in the Parliament today. And he talks about it all. The Anzacs, the Empire, and Israel's restoration. Well, they landed at Anzac Cove, 25th of April, 1915. Anzac Cove. And there it is when we went there. Just a little tiny cove. Now here's a map. This is Brighton Beach, Anzac Cove, and to the north. They were supposed to land at Brighton Beach. So they landed in the wrong place in the first place. Nothing went right. There is Brighton Beach. You'll see it's quite low. If they'd have landed there, they could have just gone up and inland and headed inland over to the Dardanelles and split Turkey. Where did they land? There! All these hills above them. Shocking terrain. And this little tiny cove, and that's where they landed. And of course, some of the photos we see in the history books, something like that. And they had trenches and they had to dig into trenches and tunnels and so on. And this was our guide, and he was showing us one of the tunnels. One of the leaders said, "You've got to dig, dig, dig." And they became known as the diggers, didn't they? Actually, the term diggers goes back even before this became a military symbol, but they were diggers for the in the mines and so on in Australia, you know, the gold mines and so on. They were diggers, diggers. That's where the name came from. It wasn't born in Gallipoli, but they got named the diggers in the end because they were digging all the time. And then the New Zealanders, in the end, they coined their phrase, "We're Kiwis." So you had the diggers and the Kiwis, and that's remained till today. Well, there's the Lone Pine Cemetery. There was one lone pine when they had the Lone Pine battle, huge battle. 41,000 went to Gallipoli. 8,700 died at Gallipoli. 18,700 were injured. Shocking death toll. The Lone Pine battle, there was a battle at Lone Pine. When we stood there, he showed us how big. They fought over an area about the size of three or four tennis courts. And 2,200 Australian soldiers died in that battle over an area of a couple of tennis courts. There were seven Victoria Crosses awarded from that battle at Lone Pine. That pine there, of course, was not the single pine that was there at the time. I mean, that's 100 years ago. But it's a descendant. It's the seed of one that was there. If you go to the Adelaide Memorial, you'll see the list of Gallipoli and those that died. And behind it, there's a Lone Pine. And if you go down to Centennial Park, into the memorial section of Centennial Park, you'll see there's the memorial, and behind it there are two pines, two Lone Pines. The seeds came from seeds of, not the original one, of course, the original one, seeds came to Australia. From those plants came these seeds. And there you see the two pines situated in this area are seedlings related to the original Lone Pine. The Battle of Lone Pine. 5:30 p.m. on August the 6th, 1915, an officer blew a whistle and the Australians charged from their trenches into a cloud of shrapnel and torrent of bullets. Some fell before they cleared their parapets, others within a few strides. Lone Pine was captured and reinforced, and so it goes on. Nine of the Victoria Crosses awarded to Australians on Gallipoli, seven at Lone Pine. Incredible. Seven. And if you go to Canberra, you'll see these little models in the War Memorial of the battles. You see, there's the trenches underneath, and there's not a tree in sight. The Gallipoli Peninsula during that time was just obliterated of all its trees and bushes and everything. It was nothing but desolation. Now, of course, when we went there, it looks a bit different. This is Lone Pine. You see a trench to the left, and then there's a road, and there's a trench on the other side of the road. Now, that looks quite wide. In actual fact, if there's a trench here where the Australians were, then there's the road, and then there's a trench by the back door, back wall. That's the spacing. That's what they fought over. As it said, some of them didn't even get out of the trench. Lifted their head, boom. And this went on. They were on Gallipoli for several months. Here were kids who came off farms and so on. And on the Turk side, half of them were dope. They weren't professional soldiers. Shocking war. Well, in Canberra, this was taken in 2008. Two boys who were there at Gallipoli picked up a pine cone. There's a pine cone. And they sent that home to their mum. And she got the seeds eventually, and they propagated those seeds at Mount Macedon and got two plants, and one went to Canberra and one went to a place called Inverell in northern New South Wales. The one at Inverell, a few years back, finally died, was dead. The tree was finished. But in 2008, in Canberra, they had a storm and a massive branch of that Lone Pine, or that pine, broke. And in 2014, Prince William planted another one. And there it is when we went there in 2019. It's interesting, these pines, because you start travelling around Australia, there's the one in Albany. It's pretty old and it's near its end. You can see the little pine cones on it. But everywhere you go, here's Wattle Park in Victoria. New South Wales, right in the middle of New South, a little tiny town, and there's an RSL Wendouren, and there's a lone pine tree in the front. Menangatang, going across from Pinaroo and so on across to Oyen and that, and there's a pine. They're everywhere. Symbols of Gallipoli. Winston Churchill wrote in 1915, "From the uttermost ends of the earth, ships and soldiers are approaching or gathering in the eastern Mediterranean in fulfillment of a destiny as yet not understood by mortal man." The arrival of the Anzacs in Egypt created the nucleus of the army needed to attack the heart of the Turkish Empire. What did he mean by "in fulfillment of a destiny as not yet understood by mortal man"? Some years back, I was at a Bible school in England at Swanwick, and I was doing the Bibles. And I said I'd read an article about the fact that Winston Churchill was driven around by a driver who was a Christadelphian. And he kept preaching the truth and help us Israel and telling Churchill what was going to happen. And I said at that Bible school, I was doing these one of these vials, and said, I don't know where I got this from, but I'd just read about it or heard about it. And there was a brother there, he said, "Well, I'm going to find out and try and find out exactly who this driver was." And another brother said, "Well, his granddaughter's in the audience." She gave me this. Winston Churchill's Christadelphian chauffeur. Now, some of you might get this magazine, the Bible magazine. The editor is Brother Paul Billington. That driver was his grandfather. So how much did Churchill know? "The finger of God," John Thomas said, "has indicated a course to be pursued by Britain which cannot be evaded and which her counsellors will not only be willing but eager to adopt when the crisis comes upon them." Help Us Israel, page 442. That brother would have hammered that into Winston Churchill's ear as he drove him all around England. Yes? Did he?
Apparently.
Somewhere. But it's interesting how God works, isn't it? You just don't know. The water of the great river Euphrates represents the military power of the Ottoman Empire. Remember when we read to the sixth vial, it said the river Euphrates will be dried up. Now, a river links with a country. The Euphrates is Turkey. Well, the Ottoman Empire as it was then. Just would say the River Murray, Australia, River Nile, Egypt, and so on. The River Euphrates. "The military and political power of the Ottoman Empire was to be dried up by the wrath of the sixth vial," the judgments of that sixth vial. Well, Gallipoli was a disaster. And by December the 10th, they evacuated. They went back to Cairo, and from Cairo, it was now into the Middle East area, and you come to Beersheba. You see, God did not want Turkey split like that. God wanted Turkey out of the land of Israel, or the land to be Israel. So the Turk had to be removed from Palestine. Not the issue in the Dardanelles that was important, it was here. And so you have into Beersheba, the Battle of Beersheba, the 31st of October 1917, when the Australian, particularly the 4th Light Horse Regiment, they got on their horses and they headed for Beersheba. And Beersheba was an Ottoman Empire base, military base, and they had all these dugouts around the city. And what would normally happen when the light horse came in, they would ride in, and when they got to a certain position, they'd stop, get off their horses, and go in to fight hand on hand. So all the Turkish guns are lined up for where the horses are going to stop. What did the Australians do? Kept going. And they couldn't get their guns down.
They actually
smell water, and there's water in Beersheba. I've been to Beersheba. Last time I went there, that was back in 1979. All we're interested in were the wells of Abraham, because there are wells there in Beersheba, built by Abraham. Today it's quite a big city. That's October, 31st of October. The Anzacs marched into Jerusalem, and General Allenby on December the 11th went into Jerusalem. The Ottomans were out of Palestine. They say that that light horse charge was the greatest light horseman attack, and it was the last one ever made. Got it working. Using the Anzacs to help dry up the River Euphrates. And then after that, you had Lord Balfour and Winston Churchill, and they then drew up the Balfour Declaration, November the 2nd, 1917, to allow the Jews to go home, in effect, that Britain would support the restoration of the Jewish people, just as John Thomas wrote in Ilpis Israel. And I've kept articles over the years in the Advertiser in 2007, the light horse charges again, and this was in Beersheba, and they put a statue in Beersheba to honour the light horse heroes. That was in 28, and there's the statue today. You see the light horsemen coming over the trenches where the sandbags were, non-stop, straight over the top of the Turks in the trenches. And a stamp was produced. There's the Australian stamp and the Israeli stamp. And if you go to a place called Harvey Bay, some of you might have been there, just out from, it's below Rockhampton, north of Brisbane. And there's the statue. That one's quite modern. Same thing, you see the horse, the light horseman, and the sandbags.
There's an island off Gladstone and Rockhampton called Curtis Island, and that's stayed there.
Yes. As you travel, you might have been through Hay. We go through Hay to get to Queensland usually. You see, there's another light horseman. What's this about? You go there, and it's Revelation 16. It's the sixth vial, the drying up of the Euphrates, the drying up of the Ottoman Empire, the drying up of the Turkish power. And Australia was in the thick of it. And you go to Albany, and there was that one that we had on the first slide. Well, you go to Adelaide. Next time you're on West Terrace, North Terrace, East Terrace, North Terrace, and there's the memorial, and the Australian Light Horse, and the trough. The water of the great River Euphrates, representing the military power of the Ottoman Empire, was to dry out. And Beersheba, that great light horse charge, removed the Turk out of Palestine. Turkey was drying up. The first five vials, do dissolve and by degrees ruin the Pope's power in the West. This is what this writer is saying. Then the sixth vial breaks the power of the Turk in the East, so making way for the Jews, whom he means to bring into fellowship of his kingdom in their own land. Thomas Goodwin, 1654, he wrote that. By reading his Bible. Of course, until the Bible was printed, the Catholic powers forbid people to read it. Well, it was only handled by the clergy. Then the printing press came in, and suddenly they print Bibles, and other people could get to read it. But there, 1654, saying, Revelation 16, the sixth vial is the drying up of the Turks. So you see it was on the Euphrates. Well, there was a Turkish Empire. You know, it was way up into Europe, below Russia there, down towards Iraq, Syria, down in by the Red Sea. That was all the Ottoman Empire. And one of the key areas in the drying up was Crimea. Lots of places started to take control and overcome the Turkish power. Now, here's the Crimean War in 1853 to 1856. And there's Crimea, and you'll see names like Inkerman, Sebastopol, and so on. And there were battles in these places, the Battle of Balaclava, the Battle of Inkerman, the Battle of Sebastopol, and so on. These were battles overcoming the Turkish rule. So you have, here's the Battle of Inkerman in painting. There's an Inkerman in South Australia and there's an Inkerman in Queensland, because these people came out from Britain and family members obviously fought in the Crimean War, and so when they took up farming in Inkerman and Inkerman up in Queensland, well, here's the one just north or between, just south of Port Wakefield, you'll see there, Inkerman Road. There's Balaclava, Battle of Balaclava, Owen, Alma, there's another Crimean name, and of course, for Timmintown, Rockhampton, there's Alma Street, there's Port Alma, the Ecclesial Hall is only, what, two streets from Alma Street, things like that. Everywhere you go, Crimean language. What was that about? Crimean War, drying up of the Turkish power. Revelation 16, sixth vial. Go to Ballarat. In Ballarat, on Sovereign Hill in 1855, this was the headline, Sevastopol is taken. The fall of Sevastopol. And here's the Victoria Cross, instituted in 1865, Victoria Cross. The medal from the guns captured at Sevastopol make up those Victoria Crosses. If you go to Townsville, you'll see in Townsville the 100 Victoria Cross recipients, and there they are all with a name and a bit of information about each one of them in Townsville. If you go to Anzac Park in Perth, there's a big cannon up there, and if you look closely at the cannon, you'll see an engraving, and that engraving is 1843. And these were the cannons that were used in Crimean War. And so the record goes on. Here, Brother Thomas, Exposition of Daniel, 1854. Crimean War, 1853 to 1856. Russia triumphant, etc. And where's Crimea today? April the 25th, Anzac Day, 2014. The Russian forces went into Crimea. And they just put Crimea like that. And Sevastopol became a key port. Their other key port is down near Syria. And in Sevastopol, there's the Russian ships. Down in the Mediterranean, you can't take an aircraft carrier into the Black Sea, but there's their base alongside Syria. King of the North coming down. And of course, here's the man driving it all. And in 2014, this was a cartoon. You see 2014 up there? Ukraine. Nothing new about this year's invasion of Ukraine. It's been planned since they took, well, it probably before Crimea anyhow. It was to take that. All this area, eastern Ukraine, and down into Crimea and Moldova, that's ancient Gog. At Magog. Gog, the land of Magog. This is ancient Magog. This area. And so here you've got the areas of military control in Ukraine right now. But it wasn't as easy as Crimea. That was March the 21st. Russian tanks obliterated. We are not told what's going to happen. Whether Russia takes Ukraine, I know some brethren feel that she will, etc. What we are told in the Bible is what it is at the end. And at the end of everything, Gog, the land of Magog, will invade Israel. Personally, I've always felt that the Christadelphians are gone by then to the judgment seat, really, because Russia will come like a whirlwind into the Middle East. Now, what happens in Europe and so on, who knows? This is the dragon of Revelation, of course. The beast is Germany and Europe, and the false prophet is Rome. All we are told in the Bible is what it is at the end. Now, remember, Britain was in the European Union for years and years and years, and people said, oh, their Bible prophecies all wrong. She's not in the Union anymore. All we're told is that Britain's not part, the Young Lions are not part of Europe at the end. And Australia's one of the Young Lions, and she's pulled out of the submarine issue with France. Not part of France or Europe at the end of it all. There was no way Britain, America or Australia could ever do that deal on submarines while Britain was in the European Union. He couldn't do that. Brexit pulled her out. Now she can do it. Britain and the Young Lions are not part of Europe at the end of it all. That's what counts. And so we come to Gallipoli and the Lone Pine. Upon the Euphrates, the vial of the Euphrates. That's our time now. What's left of the Turkish Empire? Turkey. A little area of Turkey. And in the end, Russia will come down into that area as she comes particularly into the Middle East. And finally, the Euphrates will be totally dried up. We're right at the end. Behold, I come as a thief the next in after the sixth fire, or during the sixth fire. During this fire, I will come as a thief. Blessed is he that watcheth. Like the one on the outposts of a city watching. They weren't watching, their garments were removed and they were made to feel ashamed, walking around naked because they weren't watching. But we are watching, we need to watch, because the very next slide talks about Armageddon. And that's Russia in the Middle East, the saints going forward to destroy the Gogian power. How close is this? We don't know how much time is left. We don't know what will happen with Putin and Ukraine, but what it's saying is we must be getting awfully close to be taken out of this. And the world's fearful. And when the saints are finally removed, it doesn't bear thinking how men will react. We see how Putin's reacting, just obliterating Ukraine. What's it going to be like when there's a world war? Because we know there's a world war. We because all nations will be drawn to Jerusalem for battle, because Russia's come down and taken that city. How much longer, brothers and sisters? We don't know, but it must be getting awfully close.